Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Radwan Ziadeh, who is the founder and director of the Damascus Center for Human Rights Studies. He's also a visiting scholar at the Carr Center for Human Rights at Harvard University and a visiting fellow at Chatham House, the Royal Institute of International Affairs in London. He also co-founded and directed the Syrian Center for Political and Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C. And previously, he was the editor-in-chief of Tirat magazine and a secretary of the Syrian Organization for Transparency. Welcome to Background Briefing, Radwan.
Thank you for having me.
And Radwan, you're involved with the Syrian opposition, and two of the military leaders of the Free Syrian Army called for unity within the ranks of the Free Syrian Army, who clearly are being suffering enormous setbacks at the hands of the professional Syrian military. Two things that are happening. One is the Free Syrian Army are complaining that they're not getting weapons. So I'm wondering about what's happened with all this support from, alleged support from Saudi Arabia and from Qatar. Let's begin with that, because I obviously want to talk about Kofi Annan's mission as well. But let's start with the state of the Free Syrian Army. Clearly, they have suffered enormous setbacks. Not surprisingly, they're fighting a modern army.
I think that we have been said that and repeating that many times, that the Free Syrian Army has lack of ammunition, lack of equipment. And this is why we're always asking, actually, for helping the Free Syrian Army to defend the Syrian people. The Assad regime, using the full capacity of the Syrian Army, shelling the cities by heavy artillery and troops. And this is something, of course, the Free Syrian Army has cannot afford it.
What is happening, though, with the alleged support from Saudi Arabia and Qatar? You would think that those wealthy countries would—they've got nothing but tons and tons of arms. What's happening with the alleged support coming from them? It's clearly not getting to the Free Syrian Army.
Saudis and the Qatari, actually, they said that arming the Syrian opposition is a good idea. But
right.
They can't do that through, they have actually to take an Arab decision.
I see.
That's why we have, even that we do not get support from any other nation. And this is why always have suffering from the lack of the ammunition in supporting and in defending the Syrian people. The Assad regime, I think he reached the no return point regarding using the full capacity of the 4th Division and the Republican Guard in any way to show and demolish the whole cities who are in rebellion or in revolt. This is the only way. And he getting some time by the mission of Kofi Annan. Because anyway, if he does believe that, you know, and support the mission of Kofi Annan, should stop the killing, should stop actually releasing all the political prisoners. But nothing from that happened.
Well, the Kofi Annan's peace mission, which the Russians, the Russian President Dmitry Medvedev is backing along with the foreign minister, saying it's the last chance to avoid a prolonged civil war. Well, one, there's already a civil war underway. But two, my understanding is that inherent in Kofi Annan's plan is for the Syrian opposition to immediately stop fighting. And if they stop fighting, they have no leverage. There's nothing, right? Isn't that a precondition?
What we have right now, actually, the Assad regime did not respect any of the conditions that Kofi Annan asked the Assad to implement. Stop the killing, stop the shooting the cities, release all political prisoners, withdraw all the troops from the cities. And this is why Kofi Annan provide a map how actually can the United Nations oversee all these steps. It's been implemented by the Assad regime or not.
So you're saying that even though the Russians are endorsing this, and Anand's been to Moscow and he's in China, that at the end of the day, the Syrians haven't agreed, the government hasn't agreed to anything, let alone the opposition agreeing to stop fighting. Why are the Russians saying it's the last chance then? I mean, what are they hedging their bets? That
to be clear that there is no civil war in Syria. This is a war waged by the Assad regime against the Syrian people. The killings, the crimes against humanity became actually everyday news in Syria. And this is why it's mistaken if we say that civil war, because there is no actually other communities has been attacked or etc. We have everyday civilians has been killed by the Assad troops. This is why the international community has a responsibility to stop the killings by the Assad regime and use all the necessary means. I don't believe that Kofi Annan will be success, even that we support his mission, and we think he's the right guy to do that. But it's clear that Assad, it's almost like Milosevic in former Yugoslavia. The only way he can understand is using the force against him.
Well, it's clear that the Russians are selling him a lot of arms, and they lost Syria as a client and Iran as a client, and they've got massive investments in Syria. Plus, they have a naval port there on the Mediterranean. But I think also with Putin coming back into power, he's basically, I think, got a grudge against the West. I think that's pretty clear. That their motive is, well, let me ask you, what are the Russians' motives there? Is it possible that the Russians, because the Americans keep saying, particularly the White House keeps saying, that eventually Bashar al-Assad and his family are going to fall. They're going to their days are numbered, but there's no evidence that they're about to fall. So are the Russians in any way hedging their bets?
I think this is the question should be asked to the White House.
Right.
Because the Americans, they are not doing enough actually to help the Syrian people. President Obama said that Bashar Assad lost his legitimacy and he had to sit down, but he never. It has been a year, and this is why the international and the United States has to help the Syrian opposition by all the necessary means. Support the Assad, because that will serve the interests of the United States strategically.
But the U.S.
Iran lost Syria.
Right, but the U.S. is apparently concerned about where the arms go. If the two military leaders of the Free Syrian Army are asking for all the groups to unite,
arming the opposition is not enough, because that will not actually change the balance between the Assad militias and the Free Syrian Army. It's what we have. It has the international community to intervene, to implement the safe zone, limited no-fly zone, and to target air strikes. Without doing that, actually, we will send more envoys to Bashar Assad, but he will not let him. He's buying time, because he still believes that he will be able actually to recontrol the whole country.
So it's more than selling arms, even though the West is concerned into whose hands these arms go. You're saying that you need Western intervention.
Yeah, and this is actually the official opposition of the SNC, the Syrian National Council.
Well, I think
implementing the safe zone and implementing the no-fly zone, that will last for a while, and I think the Syrian people, they can't afford it.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Radwan Ziadeh.
Thank you, Baba.
Again, I've been speaking with Radwan Ziyadeh, who's one of the leaders in the Syrian opposition. He's the founder and director of the Damascus Center for Human Rights Studies. He's also a visiting scholar at the Carr Center for Human Rights at Harvard University and a visiting fellow at Chatham House, the Royal Institute for International Affairs in London. He's also co-founded and director of the Syrian Center for Political and Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C., and previously was the editor-in-chief of Tirat Magazine and secretary of the Syrian Organization for Transparency. So what did we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we began with Professor Sung Yoon Lee at the Fletcher School of Diplomacy at Tufts University. And I tried to find out from him about this pattern that the North Koreans have where they make a deal and then they immediately go and find a way to break the deal. And he said that this is certainly the pattern, and that what they have in mind here is firing off this missile test and then perhaps also testing a new nuclear weapon, a more advanced one, since those earlier tests were a little ambiguous. And then they turn around and want to negotiate from a position of strength, and that's their MO. And frankly, they've been pretty successful. We talked about the president's trip to the DMZ, and it's true that the 28,000 Americans there are a tripwire. They'd all die pretty quickly in an attack. I asked whether an attack is likely. He said not at all likely. But the last time was in 94 when President Clinton was thinking about a preemptive strike against their nuclear facilities, the very same thing that Obama's apparently considering about Iran. And after all, they're having a nuclear summit there in South Korea to talk about Iran and North Korea. So it's not unreasonable to talk about the idea of some kind of military attack on both Iran and North Korea. But then the consequences in South Korea would be horrendous, and obviously the consequences for the Middle East in terms of an attack on Iran would be equally disastrous. So they're all meeting to find a diplomatic way to get out of this mess, but I think in many ways the military option is probably the one that is more likely to happen, even though it would be a catastrophe. Then I talked with Rashad Robinson, who's the executive director of Color Change, about all these demonstrations that have taken place around the country in support of Trayvon Martin, the 17-year-old teenager who was killed by George Zimmerman, an armed, self-appointed neighborhood watch volunteer who so far has not been prosecuted because he's being protected by Florida's Stand Your Ground law. He, obviously, there's a tremendous, spontaneous backlash happening here in the country. People, understandably, wonder about whether their kid's going to disappear if he goes to the neighborhood store. He also told us that some information I hadn't heard before about how the police had not tested Zimmerman for drugs or alcohol, but had tested the body of the slain teenager, and they kept the body for 3 days, not informing the parents. So clearly there are some major questions about the Sanford Police Department and whether or not they are engineered and were a part of a cover-up, even though we don't quite know what happened at the very moment that this young man was killed. Then I talked with one of the leaders of the Syrian opposition, Radwan Ziyadeh, about the Russian president saying that that Kofi Annan's mission is a last chance to avoid a civil war in Syria. Of course, he said, well, what do you think's going on? It's not really a civil war. It's a war by the Syrian army against the Syrian people. He thinks that not only do they need arms, they also need Western intervention. This has been a Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Nicholas Walrath. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.